Okay, this is the moment, the paranormal moment. We're going to take your phone calls with Joshua P. Warren, maybe even some of your stories. Stand by. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Also, what about psychic abilities? Do you look at that at all, Joshua?
Yes, I do. And, of course, there is a section in Poor Man's Paranormal about that. And some of it deals with some of the things I imagine most people know about, such as, you know, creating the energy wheel to test for telekinesis, or creating your own dowsing rods using a coat hanger, or using a necklace as a pendulum, and how you should sort of weigh automatism, that is to say, your body's own ability to create things that might look psychic but are not. But in other cases, I say, you know, really, if you want to sort of get the simplest example of testing psychic ability, look at gambling tools, because, you know, gambling has been such a thriving industry since the beginning of time, because it has implemented some very, very, you know, basic, simple-to-use techniques and items that have proven to be more or less random. You know, when it comes to dice or playing cards, you can use all these things that are very common and used for gambling as a psychic tester as well. And I think ultimately it's good for us to be able to not only exercise whatever psychic potential we have, but also be able to, you know, sort of test others who claim to have it by using things that are extremely simple, because, you know, as we live our lives, if we're going to actually possess some sixth sense, it's got to be something that is basic enough to help us survive under those kind of simplistic circumstances.
Well, that's a good point. Let's go to some of the calls while we chat. Josh, east of the Rockies, Vicky in St. Louis, our old friend. Hi, Vicky.
Hi, George. Hi, Joshua.
Hi there.
Hi. I just had a perfect night to call in.
Uh-oh, what happened?
About a subject I was just talking about tonight.
Perfect timing.
I was talking about Boy Scouts. I was probably the only girl who went to Boy Scouts. I had five brothers. I was doing a meeting with them. I knew the Boy Scout creed, and I knew all the how to tie the knot and everything. But I was at my sister-in-law's house tonight. Well, she's my ex-sister-in-law, because she was married to my brother that passed away.
Oh.
When he was like 40, he had a heart problem. He was a wild child of the family, very mischievous, and always teachers used to say, "Boy, how come Vicky, you're so good, and what happened to him?" No, he always was real mischievous, you know, and he'd do crazy things. And when I hear you talking, George, about knocking on the walls that you hear.
Yep, and Josh hears that all the time. He was at a hotel once, and he heard that.
So did I. I used to hear it, and I'd hear my doorbell ring all the time. And I'd be sleeping, I'd hear knocking on the wall, or the doorbell ring.
You think it's your brother?
Well, listen to this. I laid down one night, and I dozed off, and all of a sudden I heard that doorbell ring. So I got up, went and answered my front door, opened it up, and they were standing at my door. Was my brother. He had his hand against the door, leaning, the biggest smile on his face. He looked really good. He looked like he was about 25.
Whoa.
Had a blue jean jacket on. And all of a sudden, my phone rang. It woke me up. I was asleep for probably 2 minutes when that happened. So I know that it was for real, because, you know, I had to get up in my astral body or something, because it was so real.
How do you explain that, Josh?
Well, I think that brings up a very good basic question there, Vicky, because, you see, if we are to ask ourselves, what would it take for you to believe there is a ghost? You really have to stop and think, what is necessary to believe this? In fact, I've asked that question to some of the best minds in the field, and I won't name any names here, but I've had the privilege of speaking at a lot of conferences and interviewing a lot of people who are extremely intelligent, knowledgeable, and experienced. And I say to them, if I came in here and I dragged a trunk with me, and I said, in this trunk is the evidence that you will need to believe that ghosts are real, what would you require that trunk to contain in order for you to believe it. And I've been surprised by how many people have told me, really, there's just nothing that could be in that trunk. I mean, I'm talking very open-minded, philosophically oriented, intelligent people, very well educated. There's nothing that could be in that trunk. Well, if you say that, then that means your learning process is stopped. And I think what we have to do is think of ourselves as the ghost. And there are, you know, situations that do arise within quantum physics in which there are, you know, diametrically opposed things that occur, an atom spinning clockwise and counterclockwise at the same time, something in a cat state, which could be like dead and alive and so on. And if you consider that in some cases, a ghost might be a spirit or a soul or a consciousness that does not want to travel forth if it can, because it's worried, it's scared, and, you know, it has a guilty conscience, it doesn't want to be judged, whether or not there even is a judgment, we don't know. But if the person thinks there could be a judgment and that person is afraid of that judgment, it could explain why that person sticks around. If you use your imagination and you're in that position, and you don't want to go in that direction, so to speak, what are you going to do to try to communicate with us in the other direction, at the lower frequency? You know, if you can't just outright manifest and be back in this life, ringing the doorbell, calling the phone, I mean, if these are electrically oriented entities at that point, and maybe that's the thing they can connect with the most, they're going to use electrical devices in order to try to communicate with us on this side, because that's all they've got. That's the only social aspect they have. And so when I hear these kinds of stories, it makes me think that we are only seeing glimpses, facets, you know, bits and pieces of the communication that is being attempted by them on the other side. And it's a very sad thing, but at the same time, it is also inspirational for us in terms of giving our lives more meaning and more purpose, because we have to understand that what we do here is not all that we are responsible for in the big picture.
Josh, tell me about this test for ESP.
Well, there are many different tests for ESP. And, you know, in Poor Man's Paranormal, I point out a number of them. And one thing that I find especially interesting is the idea that if we have such a thing as extrasensory perception, that we are able to use it best when we are put in a position where we actually need it. And, you know, it's kind of like how that I've said before, If I sit you down, and I've actually done this, and I say, I'm going to show you four or five different symbols on these cards, you know, like the Zener ESP rhyme cards, and you tell me, well, you know, how many times you see the star, how many times you think it's going to be the square or the wavy lines, it's interesting to kind of see what the results are, and people are laughing and they're having fun. And then if you turn around the next minute and you say, now I'm going to pull out a wad of cash, and you put some money down there, and you say, now let's do this again. Suddenly the person straightens up in his or her chair, and the person starts actually listening, and there's something that happens in that person's mind, and they suddenly become extremely psychic. And the reason is, every sense that we have, whether it's visual or auditory or whatever, is there to help us survive. And nowadays, that means making money. And so what I have experimented with is trying to stimulate people to make psychic decisions by putting them in a situation where there is a true reward on the line. And when you're doing an ESP test, and you're doing it simply for fun, you'll find the results are not nearly as meaningful as when you do them when there is a tangible reward. And so whether you're using cards or dice or you're using, you know, again, you know, coat hangers to try to, you know, focus on dowsing. There has to be something tangible there on the line for it to kick in, because I believe that if we look back at the series of evolutionary developments, we can also sort of deduce that if there was a time when we didn't have eyeballs, well, something very significant had to occur in nature for us to, you know, biologically and physiologically develop eyeballs. And that was not something that we developed because, oh, it'd be fun to have eyeballs. You know, no, we needed eyeballs for some reason to survive, survival of the fittest. And right now, if we are developing another organ, which I think is a good explanation for what is probably going to happen next, call it the third eye, you know, a little spot there between your two present eyes. If we're developing that in order for some of us on this planet to be able to survive, then that's because we need to see these other realms, which at one time would have been just as unknown to us as visual light. Now we take visual light for granted. There was a time when we supposedly couldn't see it. And so I think there are other realms that have other beings within them, and that we are developing some type of an organ which is instrumental in helping us to move forth in a survivalistic manner. And when you conduct tests for ESP, you must always be mindful of that if you want to get good results.
All right, next up, let's go to Denver, Colorado, John's turn. Hey, John, thanks for calling.
Hey, Josh. Hey, George.
Hi.
I live in South Carolina on a haunted farm, but I'm in Denver, Colorado at the moment. But I was going to mention to Josh about the psychomantium mirror
mm-hmm.
that we did some training on in Black Mountain, and just kind of say that I find that to be a very interesting tool at home for the paranormal. To contact the other side. And the energy levels are pretty high when you sit in front of a mirror with the light behind the chair and gaze into it in a dark room.
You know, John, I'm glad you brought that up. That is a great example of how that things that are relatively simple can be used to profound effect in order to increase your perception of the other side. And, you know, one of the great things about what John was saying was that, you know, Dr. Raymond Moody, who has been a guest of yours many times, George,
yep.
He came here to Asheville. I actually brought him here. This was two or three years ago. And I brought Dr. Moody here, and he did a workshop here in the mountains of Asheville. And just fantastic people came. I mean, we had Rosemary Ellen Guiley attended, and Ray Buckland, who writes all the books on magic, was there. And we just had, you know, all kinds of wonderful authors. Mark Nesbitt, who does Ghosts of Gettysburg. It kind of ended up becoming a little who's who, and I didn't know that was going to happen, but it shows you the level of respect people have for Dr. Moody. And during that weekend, some incredible events took place. We set up Dr. Moody's original psychomantium mirror in one of the rooms at the inn where we did this. And I'll tell you a couple things that are pretty darn interesting about that. For one thing, not only did people have some profound experiences there, in fact, Mark Nesbitt, he brought a recorder into the room with him, and when he came out, an audio recorder, it had growls and howls and some of the creepiest stuff I've ever heard on it, which we have trouble explaining. And I was able to take, you know, that model and turn it into the psychomantium that we now have at my free museum here in Asheville, which has produced some pretty incredible stuff. But secondly, and I probably told you this, but maybe not. If not, Well, here's how it all kind of worked out. Dr. Moody brought this mirror with him, which he bought in a small antique shop in Anniston, Alabama, many years ago. and he personally painted the frame, the elaborate frame of this mirror black. And this mirror has been to numerous countries. I can't tell you how many people have looked into this mirror and seen something ghostly come from it. And after we finished our workshop here, Dr. Moody wanted me to mail him the mirror because there were some attendees who were going to stay for a day or two after he and his wife were going back. So it came time for me to mail him this incredible mirror back. And I put it in the trunk of my car to take it, you know, back to my house and package it up. And on the way there, my wife and I decided to go out and have a pizza. We stopped at a restaurant, and we got out of the car, and we heard on the trunk, thump, thump, thump. And we looked at each other. Did you hear that? We opened the trunk. You know, here's the mirror. So we closed the trunk back, thump, thump, thump on the trunk. And so later I contacted Dr. Moody, and I said, you know, this mirror is a really, really interesting piece. Is it possible I could buy this from you? And he didn't want to sell it, but, you know, we kind of went back and forth. And anyway, long story short, one of my most prized possessions is Dr. Moody's original Psychomantia mirror, and it hangs in my house to this day. And the strangest stuff happens around this mirror. And even though that kind of, you know, that story is a bit of a side note, the point is, if you have a mirror and a dim light, and you know what you're doing, it's another, you know, incredible way that you can help connect with the other side.
You know, it's pretty dramatic how these things work and what they work. And the fact that you have been able to touch most of it, Joshua, it's got to be fascinating for you.
I feel extremely just, you know, lucky and fortunate because, you know, I've been, as you know, self-employed since I was 18 years old. And that's by, you know, finding ways to take what I love and turn it into something that other people value. And I find that it gives my life a lot more meaning because I have this insatiable curiosity. I want to know why things work the way they do. Maybe I'm understimulated, you know, and I just need, you know, to always have something going on. But every single day when I wake up, I don't know what phone call I'm going to get, what email I'm going to get. It's very exciting. And sometimes it's as simple as, you know, some particular person who contacts me and says, hey, come to my house. In other cases, it's something really big. You know, it's like this year, the Warner Brothers movie I've been working on comes out. The Apparition comes out this fall.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah, in fact, I've just, you know, solidified I'm going to be traveling around quite a bit this year doing promotions on this film, and I can't wait to have the permission slip to tell you even more about it. But this is a major production. I mean, it's got actors from the Harry Potter series and the Twilight series, and it's about some college students who decide to create a ghost, and they didn't know precisely how to make the scenes realistic where they were creating the ghost in a laboratory. So they hired me to help them first as a technical consultant. And then I became an associate producer on some of the other behind the scenes stuff. And it's, you know, you never know what's going to happen.
Good for
day.
You, Josh. We'll be back with final calls on Coast to Coast AM. And we've got Joshua Warren as our special guest. We'll take final phone calls in a moment. Hey, for just 25 cents a day, you can be a Coast Insider, a Streamlink member. So go up to the website if you want to sign up for that and get podcasting downloads. And they install today my video chat gizmos. And they just put it in. We're going to test it out. Hopefully it'll be ready to go in this week, as a matter of fact, March 8th coming up. We'll have to do a run-through first. But that's what we're going to be doing for chatting while I'm in Los Angeles. So it should be fun. We'll be back in a moment with Joshua Warren on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we are back with Josh Warren and your phone calls as well. Josh, how did you get involved? How did you get interested in the paranormal? Must have been since you were a kid. Had to have been.
Yeah, that's true, George. In fact, there are There are a number of reasons, but there's one in particular. And by the way, I know I say this a lot, but my webmaster said to let everybody know if the website's going in and out, you know, the power of this show drives so many people, you know, we'll go ahead and, you know, we'll for at least a week, we'll give the free shipping and the free DVD and all that stuff. So, you know, and again, that's joshuapwarren.com. When I was a kid, there was something that I grew up with that sort of convinced me of the reality of paranormal phenomena, and this was the foundation. My family has been here in the mountains of western North Carolina since at least the late 1600s or early 1700s, I don't think there are a lot of people who can say that. And without getting too detailed, basically, you know, when I was a little kid, I heard stories about my grandmother saying that, you know, when she was in the Depression period, she was given a camera when she was rather young as a birthday gift. And one day her father, named Jack, and her older brother, named Claude, came home from a small game hunting trip. And she took a picture of them posing with just, you know, rabbits and squirrels. And when the picture came out, Claude did not have a head. They didn't know enough about photography to understand how weird it was that Claude did not just have a cloudy, you know, sort of overexposed spot. I mean, you could see the vegetation behind him. In fact, I actually got to see this photograph when I was a child. And so they kind of blew it off. And then 1 month later, Jack, their father, was fixing lunch on a summer afternoon in the kitchen of their farmhouse in Barnardsville, North Carolina. And Claude was sitting there on the deck reading his favorite magazine. It was called Western Magazine, Old Cowboy Stories. And he and his father, Jack, were conversing through an open window, and at one point Jack said something to Claude, and Claude didn't respond. And so, you know, finally Jack went out there, and here is Western Magazine sitting there, you know, lying there, laying there, whatever, on the deck, pages blowing back and forth, but, you know, no Claude. And later in the day, some of the family came home, and, you know, he said, where did Claude go? Nobody knew. And so after, you know, a day of this, they got the authorities together and everybody went, you know, through the woods scouring. And as the old proverb goes, you know, Claude was never seen nor heard from again. There is not one single trace.
What do you think happened to him?
He literally disappeared in mid-sentence in the blink of an eye, almost as if he were raptured away. And when I heard this as a kid, I thought it was incredible. But as an adult, I went back and said, okay, what's the real story? And I went to Barnardsville, and I interviewed every person I could find who knew Claude, who knew of the situation, and they all told me the same story. So, obviously, I have no way of knowing. But I think that there are dimensions that can just sort of swallow us up. And this was not some kind of story in my family. You must understand, this was a tragedy. Now, this did not affect me personally, because this is before I was born, but it affected my family in an incredible, profound, you know, melancholy way. I mean, this was an unresolved loss that haunted people, you know, for the rest of their lives. I mean, it was very, very painful to never have any kind of conclusion there. And I, at an early age, sort of accepted the paranormal from that perspective as something more realistic than just some, you know, possible speculation, some peripheral way of explaining the things that we can't otherwise place meaning upon. And so therefore, I guess I got a leg up on kind of understanding the weird things like this happen. And I really do think, having no direct personal experience, that my Uncle Claude somehow slipped into another place. And I say that because there are similar stories about people living in this area during that period of time who vanished while people were looking at them. There was one in Tennessee where, you know, a man was standing in a field, and there were about four witnesses who just saw him vanish. I mean, when I say rapture, and you know, I'm not a religious person, but it literally is like, boom, the guy was gone. And I heard you last night interview these folks who are talking about
May 21st.
You know, yeah, May 21st. And personally, you know, I think that's ridiculous and very irresponsible. You know, I don't think that, it's good to ever tell people on this particular date this is going to happen. But it may be that that kind of thing has been happening for a long, long time now. But I definitely feel like that we have, unfortunately, an ability to fulfill these, you know, self-fulfilling prophecies, and it's bad to scare people. You know, it's bad to tell everybody, you know, hoard up everything you've got and worry, and because that's just going to stifle all that we have, because nobody knows, and that's what being a researcher is about, accepting that nobody knows.
All right, let's go to the phones. We'll go to Wellington, Ohio. First-time caller. Hey, Jim, welcome to the show.
Good evening.
Hi,
George. Good evening, Joshua.
Hi.
Very interesting show. I listen to you on my way home every night, and I enjoy the show thoroughly. I missed what's going to happen on May 21st. What's going to happen on May 21st?
May 21st is the date they say is Judgment Day, the end of the world. They claim that something dramatic is going to happen. A huge earthquake is going to destroy most of the planet, and those that will be raptured will be taken away. May 21st, and I asked them to come on the show the following Monday, and they said they won't be around.
Okay, that's interesting. But I've had a number of unusual spiritual things happen to me, and I believe that, you know, there is a very spiritual world out there. There's angels and spirits, and I had the unique experience of seeing my dad taken to heaven when he passed away by a strong angel. And I watched him actually go through a gateway into heaven. And it was unusual because they were approximately 12 feet tall. And my dad was very young in appearance when I saw this. And it's just really an unusual experience. And, you know, Christ told us that, you know, we don't fight against flesh and blood, but we fight against spirits and principalities in high places. So I truly believe there is a spiritual world out there.
I do too. I do not think the end of the world is going to come on May 21st.
No, I don't think so either, because nobody knows the exact time.
Nobody knows the time. In every past civilization, Joshua has always felt they were in the end times. Everyone.
Yeah, and I that's why that, you know, I really admire the way that you handled that interview last night, because, you know, it's such an extreme thing. I mean, you kept trying to get the guy to say, you know, will you come back if you're wrong? And he wouldn't even accept that possibility. To me, that shows somebody who is just not a logical thinker, who doesn't even have the ability to perceive, well, I might be wrong. You know, if you can't say to yourself, I might be wrong, well, then I think at that point you lose all grasp of self-awareness. But when it comes to these winged beings, whether you call them angels or demons, oddly enough, I have seen enough by evaluating historical cultural perspectives in addition to paranormal reports to believe that some of these realms of living beings that exist just outside of what we normally experience as physical, they do have wings. They are large beings with wings, and some of them are incredibly intimidating, like Mothman, you know, type creatures,
mm-hmm, exactly.
or the Highgate vampire. In fact, I've always thought, you know, the Mothman Prophecies movie was, I mean, I love the book, but, you know, I thought the movie did a pretty good job of getting that point across. And so, yeah, there are winged beings, in my opinion, that are just beyond the physical realm that slip in and out. I have never seen one of these directly. I've had some incredibly lucid dreams where, you know, I've dreamt of them, if you will, but I've never been in a waking state and seen one of these. But I don't doubt, however, that given the historical context that goes back thousands of years, that they exist. That they have been represented in so many different archaeological works. And so I would not be surprised if people start seeing more and more of those. But I definitely frown upon, you know, individuals who don't at least have enough self-awareness to accept the fact that they might be wrong.
Okay, next up, let's go to Sue in Chico, California. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Josh. I think I've got a ghost in my apartment, and I definitely lived in a haunted apartment. And I also would like to know if there's any way that I could communicate with some very wonderful friends who are on the other side that I need in my world right now, like my wonderful babysitter and good neighbor next door.
Well, you know, Sue,
I'm a blind person, by the way.
You're blind?
Yes.
Well, you know, that's interesting, Sue.
I have plastic eyeballs. You were talking about eyeballs earlier. Mine are fake.
Well, have you ever, as a blind person, seen a ghost?
I have felt a ghost.
Yeah?
I had one in my apartment my last apartment, and please don't laugh at this because it actually happened. Every single night, and I don't know who it was, my kitchen cupboard doors would open, shut, open, shut, open, shut, every single night. I knew my place was haunted for sure. And in this place, I'm having temperature shifts in my room. I know something or someone is in here. I'd like to know who it is.
Well, you know, I'm glad that you called, because one thing that is also important when it comes to understanding perception is that we don't see with our eyes.
Nope.
We see with the brain. We don't hear with the ears. We hear with the brain. You know, we don't taste with the tongue. We taste with the brain. These are just devices that help us accumulate that information. Now,
to come to your lab too.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have talked to people who are blind, have been blind since birth, who have seen ghosts. And I guess it's similar maybe to when you're sleeping. And, you know, you even if you have a dream, you at that time, you don't know what's out there and what's in here. But now I would say that in your case, if you are having this auditory perception of these cabinets, you know, opening and closing.
It's not in this apartment.
Yeah, well, figure out what it is that is the easiest thing for you to get information of a binary code. Basically, you know, a one or a two, a yes or a no. For example, you know, if you had optical sight, I would say, you know, take something like a flashlight and, you know.
Here it's temperature shifts.
Okay, well, that's something else that you can look into. Try to figure out if the temperature is shifting subjectively, whether or not you consider cold a yes or warm a no. Because when you have a binary system, you can use that to gain any information you want.
Cold, it's a yes.
Okay, well, there you go. Cold is a yes.
I'd like to know who or what it is.
Well, you have to, it's going to be laborious.
That's tough to find out, Josh, isn't it?
Yeah, you can use that system as a part of language. You know, are you this person? Yes or no. Are you that person? Yes or no. You know, and that's how I would do. Take whatever information that you can connect with most easily and use that in order to determine it, because Morse code showed us, for the most part, you know, if you can you can tap something out, whether you do it through light or sound, or taste, or touch, or whatever the sensation is, you can communicate. It just takes a little longer sometimes.
You think people are more fascinated with ghosts as they are, as opposed to Bigfoot or UFO stories?
Yeah, I think so, because
it strikes home, doesn't it?
Well, that it's something that ultimately all of us can relate to. All of us are living beings. And so all of us have some way of questioning, you know, what it is that we are about consciously, energetically. Where are we from? Where are we going? And I think that, as I kind of mentioned earlier, a lot of these other things, UFOs and cryptids, and those are subsets of it. And I've seen a lot of cryptozoologists, for example, whom I feel have just kind of gone nuts over the years because they're looking for some sort of a physical, biological, normal organism, and they're never going to find it. And when you're looking for something that's not there, it drives you crazy after a while. But we know that consciousness exists. We experience it. That's, you know, we are conscious. And this, therefore, should be the starting point of trying to determine what the course of consciousness is. From birth to death and beyond, unfortunately, many people think that we are first physical and we are second energy. But I argue, especially in books like my Kukulkan book, we are first energy. And the physical just adheres to that. It attracts to that. And that's why we morph. You're not the same person today that you were yesterday. Because the physical is always changing. We watch it happen. You start as a baby. You go through this arc. You get all, you know, gray and withered, and then you die. But the energy remains consistent.
Poor Man's Paranormal by Joshua P. Warren. His website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasour, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.